It was a time of pride for the gay community.
I felt like I was part of a movement to liberate ourselves.
Then came a mysterious and devastating disease.
The latest figures from Los Angeles County.
We were describing evidence of a new acquired immune deficiency syndrome.
This is a story of strength and resilience.
This is our deciding moment. Together, we are greater than AIDS.
Commitment to life. Sunday, April 28th at 9 p.m. Eastern on MSNBC and streaming now on Peacock.
Good evening from New York. I'm Chris Hayes, and Election Day is not over yet. We just got a new batch of votes out of Arizona's Pima County, which pushed Democratic gubernatorial candidate Katie Hobbs even further into the lead in that very, very hotly contested state. And any minute, we are expecting another batch of ballots from Maricopa County. Those could decide the result of this election. Right now, as you can see there, Katie Hobbs, who's the state's current Secretary of State, holds a narrow lead, just under 30,000 votes, over her Republican opponent, Kari Lake. Now, the results of this race could also have massive implications for the 2024 presidential election. Lake, former local TV anchor, is one of the most vehement election deniers running this cycle. She's previously said that if she had been governor in 2020, she would not have certified President Joe Biden's victory in Arizona. Joining me now with the very latest is Steve Kornacki at the big board. Steve. All right, Steve, we got these Pima votes. So let's go first to that and what they did for this race.
Yeah, so Pima County is the second largest county in the state. It's where Tucson is. It's a very blue county. So we were expecting that Katie Hobbs would get a big boost out of Pima. They released about 24,000 votes about 15 minutes ago. Hobbs did do very well with that batch of votes. And you can see it extended her lead nearly 4,000 votes. She's now up to a 29,048 vote lead statewide over Kari Lake. As you say, what we are waiting on right now is Maricopa County. That's where Phoenix is. That's where the majority of the votes in the state are. And that's where the majority, by far, of the outstanding ballots in this race are. Now, they have told us, officials in Maricopa County, that sometime in the 8 to 9 o'clock hour, Eastern hour, that is this hour, oh, yeah, they're going to release their final significant batch of votes. And this is going to be obviously a very telling batch of votes because given the gap that Kari Lake faces statewide here, she doesn't just need to win the batch of votes we're about to see from Maricopa County. She's got to win them overwhelmingly if she's going to erase the kind of deficit she's facing here. There are some other outstanding votes throughout the state, but this is the bulk of them. We think about 75,000 votes or so to come here from Maricopa County, and these are a specific type of vote. We've been talking about this for a few days. Mail-in ballots that voters brought into the polls personally on Election Day. And so in 2020, it was a very Republican batch of votes. The Lake campaign, Republicans in Arizona, had been pointing to these ballots. There are about 300,000 of them in Maricopa County as what they said was going to lift them to victory in this race and in others. So far, we've been getting nightly updates and installments of about 75,000. Lake's been doing good with them, but she's not been doing as well as touted, and she's not been doing as well as Republicans had been counting on. And that's why Hobbs continues to lead here. And unless that trend reverses in a big way, and like I said, Lake needs probably to win 65-70% of what's about to come out of Maricopa County, the math just becomes prohibitive for her statewide. So again, we're waiting on it. They said 8 to 9 o'clock hour Eastern time. I'm just checking in to make sure nothing's happened while I've been talking. And I can tell you nothing's happened while I've been talking. But it's a very significant moment in this race.
Yeah. So if we go through this, you know, 75,000 ballots, we think this is the last big significant batch. It's not all of them. There's provisionals and stuff like that. Right. So just to do it back in the envelope. Right. Let's say you win them 2-1. Huge margin. Right. I mean, 66% to 34. That would be 50 to 25. Net you 25,000 votes. Still puts you about 4,000 votes short. So just to give a sense of the margin that's got to come out of this batch to get her into the lead.
Right. And that's, you did it. If you get down to a few thousand, there are some other votes
so,
around the state.
Yes, it would still be in the running.
Sure. And then, as you say, there are additionally, there are provisional ballots to be counted. There are some other ballots here, cured ballots, that could enter into the mix. But officials from Maricopa were quite clear. They said, this is the last big one you're going to get. So there, you know, this 75,000 is the bulk of the remaining vote from the biggest county. It's the bulk of the remaining vote in the state. So, yeah, I mean, I think if it's, you know, anywhere less than, you know, mid 60s here for Kari Lake, it just gets very, very difficult to see how she could pass Katie Hobbs. And again, I think we saw her in last night's installment get about 55%.
Right.
To give you an idea there. So that's key. There's also under the radar here, underneath this map, there's a key congressional race that's based in Maricopa County, where there's a Republican incumbent who's currently leading by about 800 votes over his Democratic challenger. It's one, if Democrats want to get control of the House, they really need to win that district. If this is a Republican-friendly batch of votes, it may not be friendly enough to lift Lake, but it could save Republicans in that key House race. So we're keeping an eye on that as well.
I'm wondering if you can pull this up, the Secretary of State and the Senate races, just to give a comparison of these different races, right? So Adrian Fontes is the Democrat there winning, you know, he's up by 5 points with 93% in. Mark Kelly up over Blake Masters in that range, somewhere around there, up by 5 points, right? Running along similar lines. So, you know, Lake outperformed those other two in a statewide race that I think people saw as the most favored of the Republicans in that state, right?
Yeah, she'd been running consistently ahead of Masters, and I think a lot of the talk was, would Kerry Lake lift Blake Masters to victory on her coattails? She would have to win, of course, to have coattails, but she has outperformed Masters. The other one I would mention there, if we're talking all the statewide races in Arizona, the race for attorney general is actually closer than the race for governor. And Abe Hamadeh actually ran with the endorsement of Donald Trump.
Yep.
He echoed Trump's claims about 2020. We talked about how there was no swing state in the country that fielded top to bottom a more pro-Trump, Trump-aligned on 2020 ticket than the Republicans in Arizona. This one, as you could see, is much closer even than the governor's race. So you're talking about, will that Hobbs lead stand up here? This one is shakier in the attorney general's race. This Democratic lead is shakier, and Hamadeh may have the best chance of any Republican here. But again, it all depend on this number, and I'm just making sure we still do not have that number.
And we should also say that Hobbs is the only Democrat elected statewide, if I'm not mistaken. I think she's the only incumbent Democrat statewide in Arizona. She was Secretary of State. She was there in 2020.
Right.
And she ran an interesting race, right? I mean, there was a whole bunch of second guessing her choices. For one, she did not debate Kerry Lake. She said, look, this person is a fabulist because she says Donald Trump won in 2020. And there was a lot of fear that by Democrats, I think that was a mistake strategically.
Well, yeah, and there's, listen, one of the concerns, I think, too, of Democrats was simply that, if we would go back to the governor's race here, was simply that Kerry Lake is, whatever you think of her politics, she's a very polished communicator.
Extremely.
She's a news anchor in the Phoenix market. Very, you know, she has a real sort of stage presence there. So I think there was, you know, you talk to some Democrats out there, you know, they thought that might be a problem in a debate, too. Just, you know, Kerry Lake's sort of showmanship skills. Whatever you make of that decision, right? No, the fact is Hobbs is sitting here. One, if she can get one more good for her update out of Maricopa County, she may very well be on her way to being elected governor. Now you could say, hey, maybe she made it worse on herself by not debating.
Yeah, you never know.
Maybe she took some heat there that she wouldn't have taken otherwise. And maybe this wouldn't even be something that's a matter of 29,000 votes right now. So you could always second guess that. But,
Let's go. Since I have you here, can we go to the House races that there was a few that were called?
Yep.
And just see what's outstanding. I'm managing like our calls, AP's calls, the sitting desk calls. So I'm losing track. Can we talk about two of those races that are up there?
Yep.
Just because I think this is the Alaska at large.
Yep.
And Maine too.
Right.
Right. These are both, we're not going to get the official tally on these for a while because they're ranked choice voting and there's like a date certain at which they do.
This will be November 23rd in Alaska. They'll run it there. They'll run it sooner in Maine. This is the same sort of dynamic we saw in the special election over the summer. Peltola is the incumbent because she won a special election over the summer. Exact same set of candidates. If it does finish in this order, that's the order it finished this summer. Begich got eliminated. His voters' second choice were reallocated. Peltola won the seat. So this is setting up. It was narrow, but this is setting up right now the same way it did over the summer. And then Maine 2, that ranked choice runoff will be held sooner, although you can see the Democrat here, Jared Golden, is already sitting at 49.2%. He's close to 50, significantly ahead of the Republican challenger here. So even if this does go to that ranked choice runoff here, Poliquin would need to overwhelmingly win the third party votes here. In fact, we saw this in 2018, Golden and Poliquin, same set of candidates. Golden was the challenger there, won it on a ranked choice runoff. So those are, you know, main two Democrats of this entire list of seats here. I think Maine, too, is one Democrats maybe feel the best about. There are a few others that they feel good about. The problem for them is if they're trying to get to 218, there are some on here right now where the numbers are, we say the numbers are starting to look a little prohibitive against Carrie Lake in Arizona. There are some of these districts where they might be prohibitive for Democrats with a few more updates. They're going to need some surprises if they want to actually get to 218.
Yeah, and we should see Arizona 6 is one of those, I think, where they're kind of staring down a tough go again.
That was that Pima County update we just got a few minutes ago. So the Pima County portion of the 6th district is not as Democratic as the rest of the county. And in fact, it allowed the Republican advantage now for the first time to move north of 3,000 votes. So that's gone up almost 1,500 votes just in the course of today. Democrats, I think, are running out of votes there. And this is the one we're waiting on in Maricopa County, Dave Schweiker. It was last night's update was the first one that put Schweiker into the lead in this district. This is what I'm saying. That update last night that Carrie Lake got 55% in. Schweiker, you know, was running a little bit better than that, but, you know, basically the same. Wasn't enough to put Lake in position to imminently win the race, but it might be enough for Schweiker, where if he gets another update like he got last night, again, he could put enough distance between himself and Hodge that it becomes prohibitive for the Democrats. And again, the Democrats really, I think, wanted to get both of these Arizona seats. Without them, they're not eliminated,
but
they
really
just need,
tough.
Yeah, they need some surprises here.
Final thing in that district, Schweiker's an incumbent. What was that? What is that Arizona won Biden-Trump?
So this was, there was redistricting here that made this a Biden district original, you know, under
so
the
new lines. So that's basically a dead even.
Right.
Dead even district.
And Schweiker was seen as, and rightly, just based on these results, as one of the more vulnerable Republicans, you know, one of about a dozen running in a district that Biden carried under the new configuration. Didn't change too dramatically, but it changed enough to put him in some jeopardy there. But again, those Maricopa County updates, if it's, we're saying Carrie Lake needs 67%, name your number in the mid to high 60s. You know, if Schweikert's even getting 51% in his district of what comes out in this Maricopa batch, he will build on this lead here, and it gets that much tougher for Democrats.
All right. We're going to keep you there. We're looking at Maricopa coming in. We're also looking at some implications that might arise for congressional races. So we will check back in. Coming up, Republicans across the country ran, like Carrie Lake, on the big lie. And in nearly every major race, the election deniers came up short. Democratic Congressman Ruben Gallego joins me on the fading power of the Trump playbook next. American democracy dodged a potentially fatal bullet in the midterms as voters rejected basically all of the high-profile election deniers in the crucial swing states. All except in one race, though it's still outstanding, we were just discussing, Carrie Lake's bid for governor in Arizona. The losers include the Secretary of State candidates with power over their state's elections in the key states of Arizona, Michigan, and Nevada. That's Mark Finchem in Arizona, Jim Marchant in Nevada. In fact, Marchant formed a coalition of candidates who all promoted the big lie and were running to be in place for 2024, essentially as a pro-coup ticket. We're going to fix the whole country, Marchant said, and President Trump is going to be president again in 2024. So that was the promise. And people don't usually pay very close attention to Secretary of State races, understandably. This year, though, Democrats and anti-Trump Republicans worked to make sure they knew that if election deniers won, their future votes might not count.
He's a conspiracy theorist and member of an extremist militia. Now, Mark Finchem wants to be Arizona's Secretary of State. That would give him considerable power over elections, but Finchem still denies the results of the last one. He led the effort to discard legitimate votes, helped organize the January 6th protests where police were attacked, then said politicians should have the power to decide elections, not voters. It all means if Finchem wins now, you lose.
Joining me now, Congressman Ruben Gallego, who's a Democrat in Arizona, where he has watched these races unfold up close. And Congressman, Steve was just saying, and I think it's true, that there was no state, no swing state, with a more uniform sort of pro-Trump, pro-big lie statewide ticket than your state. How worried were you about Finchem? How much were you sweating that race?
I wasn't really sweating that race. Once I knew that, number one, Adrian Frances was the nominee, and number two, that there was enough money coming in to actually get the message out. I think Arizonans at the end of the day are a fairly moderate lot. Even though we may be a little conservative on the sun side, we do believe in democracy and the fact that Fincham was an insurrectionist, was a known insurrectionist, was also part of the Oath Keepers. I think at the end of the day was going to bring him down, and clearly it has.
Yeah, and there's also a money issue here, which is interesting. I'm curious what it looked like from where you are in terms of the ads, but this really jumped out at me. $50 million was spent on television advertising in four states, Michigan, Arizona, Nevada, Minnesota. Democrats had a 10-to-1 spending advantage. So there was Democrats were able to raise a lot of money for these sort of candidates running against the kind of pro-coup folks. And I'm wondering, I know what things looked like in my media market, how that looked in Arizona.
Well, what looked like in Arizona was that it was a very pro-democracy message that was going out. But look, we were fighting in a midterm, and in a swing state like Arizona, you're really fighting at a deficit when you're fighting in a midterm. So we had to spend more money for us to even get up to even. And then we obviously had a really good candidate. We had a really good opposition candidate, obviously that helps. And then we actually had a lot of outside help too. So all together, it didn't make a difference, but it's dangerous that we have to take care of this at the, you know, general election. The Republicans should actually be taking care of this themselves. The fact that they have insurrectionists, election deniers, literally people that actually are advocating for fascism running in their primaries really is a very dangerous situation. And Republicans should really know and learn how to school their own party.
Yeah, and obviously Arizona's had a bunch of hairy sort of experiences. There was a sort of protest outside Maricopa County Board of Elections in 2020, all sorts of characters there, some I think open carrying, if I recall correctly. You had these kind of vigilantes showing up outside ballot drop boxes until they were ordered by a federal court order to stop doing that. You now have Carrie Lake, who is behind by about 30,000 votes. It's not a called race. It's possible she pulls that out, but there was some interesting reporting over the weekend about Carrie Lake, who has been one of the most sort of aggressive election deniers. In fact, Donald Trump praised her in a private phone call to Blake Masters for the fact that she talked about 2020 being rigged every single time she could. And this is from some reporting inside her, quote, war room, where Republicans prepare for likely loss. Carrie Lake, staring at a likely loss, is being advised by GOP operatives and some of her closest aides to take a measured approach should she come up short in the vote tally and not storm the castle. How much are the folks in your state trying to game out what a non-conceded to loss would look like in this event?
We're not thinking about that. If you decide not to concede, you're just a loser. So we're not worried about you. As a matter of fact, you want to go down as being an ignorant loser. Congratulations. It's not going to help you in future elections. So go ahead. Go at it, Carrie. So look, and if you want to storm the castle, you're storming the castle against a lot of Maricopa County police officers. We're not falling for this BS anymore. You want to try to do that, you're going to be met with a lot of resistance. That's something you may have tried in 2020. We're not doing this anymore. You lose, game over. We're moving on. We're not going to try to mitigate these people. We're not trying to assuage them anymore. If they want to wallow in their sorrow and they want to like come up with excuses, good. Live with that and move on. We won. Time to, deal with reality.
All right. Congressman Ruben Gallego, who represents Arizona in the U.S. Congress, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
All right. There's still a lot we don't know about the races that will decide control of the House. Kornacki is back with us after this.
Hey, everyone, it's MSNBC's Chris Hayes. For the first time since 1892, we have an election in which both candidates have presidential records. It's a chance to take a hard look at what Joe Biden and Donald Trump have actually done as president. On a special Why Is This Happening podcast series called With Pod 2024, The Stakes, I'm talking to experts about the two candidates' records on specific policy areas like immigration, taxes, climate, and more. So you know what's at stake come November. Search for Why Is This Happening and follow. Hey, everyone, it's Chris Hayes. This week on my podcast, Why Is This Happening? We're back with another installment of our special series with Pod 2024, The Stakes. I'm talking to experts about both Joe Biden and Donald Trump's records on specific policy areas during their time as president. This week, economist Kim Clausing on taxes.
underfunding the IRS really serves the interest of dishonest people at the top rather than your typical worker who would benefit from being able to get their questions answered and getting their returns processed in a quick way.
That's this week on Why Is This Happening? Search for Why Is This Happening wherever you're listening right now and follow.
So a huge call was made in this studio on Saturday night when the NBC News Decision Desk projected that incumbent Democratic Senator Catherine Cortez Masto kept her seat, fending off the challenge from Republican Adam Laxalt with that victory. And with that victory, Democrats managed to stay in control of the Senate. They could even expand their majority in that Georgia runoff, which is 22 days from now, but it will not be the race that decides control of the Senate. They will likely hold the Senate leadership election after that. Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is expected to keep his title. In fact, he's going to join Rachel Maddow in just the next hour, and I'm anxious to see what he has to say. What's not completely clear, not totally clear, is what happens on the other side, whether his counterpart, the still minority leader, Mitch McConnell, will keep his position as minority leader. We were set to find out Wednesday. That's when Senate Republicans hold their leadership election with several senators, including Marco Rubio of Florida, Ted Cruz of Texas, Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, calling for that vote to be delayed until after the Georgia runoff. As of now, they're not delaying it. Also uncertain is what happens to Kevin McCarthy. Now, House Republicans are meant to hold leadership elections tomorrow. There are reports that Arizona Congressman Andy Biggs, who's a far-right MAGA diehard, may challenge McCarthy, even though control of the House is still not determined at this moment. NBC News senior national political reporter Sahil Kapoor joins me right now. And Sahil, we're very used to these sorts of post-election recriminations and finger pointings among Democrats. We're seeing a little bit more among Republicans than we have over the last few elections, partly, I think, because the big lie kind of smothered that last time around. What's going on in the Senate? There is a real movement to delay these leadership elections. And more people joining, including Lindsey Graham, who I think of as like an ally of leadership. There's a huge letter signed by all these outside people, including Ginny Thomas, saying what's going on there.
That's right, Chris. And that's largely because Republicans vastly underperformed expectations in the Senate. They were widely expecting to pick up that minimum one seat they needed to capture the majority. Now they have fallen short, and they might even end up down one seat if Democrats end up capturing Georgia in that runoff. Now, Mitch McConnell is facing the greatest threat to his leadership over his 15 years of running the Republican caucus. I say that because he's not had much of a threat at all before, and now there are eight Republican senators who are public on the record trying to delay the leadership election. Now, that's not going to happen, according to McConnell's leadership team. They are proceeding. A few of us reporters asked him when he was making his way to the Senate floor earlier today whether he has the votes to be elected leader. He said, yeah, of course. He sounds very confident, and that confidence is with some merit, Chris, simply because this is a secret ballot election. McConnell simply needs a majority of his caucus to get, reelected leader. And, you know, eight is much lower of a number than the dissenters that his critics need to stop him from becoming leader. The other reason is that while people like Donald Trump blame Mitch McConnell for the Republican Party falling short, others blame Donald Trump. Some others blame Rick Scott. I spoke to one Republican senator a few hours ago, Senator Mitt Romney of Utah, and he said the blame here lies largely with Donald Trump. I want to play what Mitt Romney had to say.
Abortion played a much bigger role than we'd anticipated. I think President Trump was an albatross on the electoral prospects of some of our candidates. He helped select some of the people who turned out not to be very effective candidates. I understand he's going to run for president and announce that tomorrow. It's like the aging pitcher who keeps losing games. If we want to win, we need a different pitcher on the mound. And I know there's some fans that love him, but it's time for him to get off the mound because we have a real strong bench.
Now, Romney may be a rare Republican senator willing to say that out loud, but I can guarantee you, Chris, there are many within the party in this Capitol complex who quietly agree with him, who blame Donald Trump for the party's losses. And that's one of the reasons that McConnell is still the favorite on Wednesday to be reelected leader.
Yeah, we should say Cynthia Loomis, I think, of Wyoming, also said something about Ron DeSantis being the future of the party. I saw that today. There's a really nasty public sniping between the Rick Scott and Mitch McConnell camps, which I found really striking. They're going at each other in public. There was also a House meeting today. The House Republican Caucus had a kind of leadership forum today. What can you tell me about that?
That's right. A candidate forum, Chris, it's been going on for hours and only recently started breaking down. And this is where candidates, you know, make their pitch to, you know, the room full of caucus members about why they want to be leader, why they want to be whip. The one race, of course, that everyone is watching is the race for would-be speaker if Republicans do end up capturing control of the House. I want to be abundantly clear. We have not called that yet, but our projections right now suggest that Republicans are on track to win a majority of 219 to 216. That is a wafer-thin margin that Republicans would have if the vote goes as is currently projected. And that means Kevin McCarthy needs 218 votes on the floor of the House to become Speaker. Now, I'm no mathematician, Chris, but that's one fewer than 219, which means he has almost no margin to spare. Tomorrow is a closed-door meeting where he simply needs a majority of his caucus to be nominated Speaker. That's easy. The difficult part is getting elected Speaker on the floor of the chamber on January 3rd. And this is where a number of members coming out of the meeting told reporters today that Kevin McCarthy does not have the votes and they are not prepared to support him. That includes namely far-right members like Matt Gaetz. It includes the chair of the Freedom Caucus, Scott Perry. There are others like Bob Good of Virginia who are also not ready to support McCarthy. But there are many who are also on Kevin McCarthy's side. That includes Jim Jordan, the right-wing Republican who would be in line to chair the Judiciary Committee. Even Marjorie Taylor Greene said she's behind Kevin McCarthy because she fears that Democrats in a wafer-thin Republican majority might be able to peel off some Republicans and elect a Democratic Speaker. That's not going to happen, Chris, but it points to the end game here, which is that the rabble-rousers of the Freedom Caucus need to come up with an alternative, a viable alternative, or it just keeps going to a second and third and fourth ballot, and Kevin McCarthy would ultimately be the favorite in that situation.
Yeah, Marjorie Taylor Greene was sort of an interesting player here because it's very clear she's looking for concessions. There's also some reporting today about Trump supporting McCarthy behind the scenes. And again, all of that is about leverage, right? I mean, what the folks like Marjorie Taylor Greene and what Donald Trump want is to have a Speaker of the House that effectively they can control, right? Who owes them, who's in debt to them.
And McCarthy has anticipated this moment for a long time now, Chris, which is why he's fought to stay in Donald Trump's good graces every step of the way. He knew that Trump could make or break his potential speakership were Republicans to take control of the House because he would need the votes of many Trump-aligned lawmakers. So that's the situation right now. We don't know exactly what the concessions that they're demanding are. You know, we know in the past that the Freedom Caucus may want things like committee assignments. They may want commitments on certain legislation that would be brought up. They want procedural things like, legislation gets to be released X hours before a vote. They're not being particularly public about that, but this this faction of dozens of House Republicans does have some leverage in the sense that they have been willing to deal embarrassments to Republican leadership on the floor of the House. And that's something that Kevin McCarthy would very much like to avoid early next year, again, if he does get the majority.
All right, Sahil Kapoor, thank you very much. Coming up, we're still waiting on a big cache of votes out of Maricopa County in Arizona with the governor's race at stake. Steve Kornacki standing by. Ahead.
Stay up to date on the biggest issues of the day with the MSNBC Daily Newsletter. Each morning, you'll get analysis by experts you trust, video highlights from your favorite shows.
2024 is now truly the most important election in the history of our country.
Previews of our podcasts and documentaries, plus written perspectives from the newsmakers themselves, all sent directly to your inbox each morning. Get the best of MSNBC all in one place. Sign up for MSNBC Daily at MSNBC.com.
On the MSNBC podcast, How to Win 2024, political experts former Senator Claire McCaskill and Democratic strategist Jennifer Palmieri examine the campaign strategies unfolding in this all-important election.
The focus is on the voters that are not necessarily in your corner now.
If Democrats are going to win in 2024, we have to be able to explain what is happening at the border and what the solutions are.
Search for How to Win 2024 wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes every Thursday.
We just got a big new dump of ballots from Maricopa County. Steve, what's the deal?
And there it is. It just literally updated on our screen. We got 74,000 new votes out of Maricopa County. Remember, this is the last big batch from the last big county outstanding here in Arizona. And Carrie Lake does win this batch of votes. She gets 40,575 of them. Katie Hobbs gets 30,000. 825 of them. What does that translate into? Remember, we said Lake probably needs to be in the mid-high 60s.
Yep.
She gets 57% of this new batch of votes. It breaks 57% for Carrie Lake, 43% for Katie Hobbs. That's not the target we set for Carrie Lake. And what that means is, if you look at the statewide total, again, Lake was down about 30,000 coming into this dump of votes. She now still trails by more than 20,000 votes, 20,481. That's why she needed such a big margin from this big batch of votes, because Hobbs had built a 30,000 vote lead. She needed to shrink that thing down well under 10,000, maybe under 5,000. Again, what is left now in Arizona? There are some provisional ballots that remain in Maricopa County. There are some cured ballots. There are some counties throughout the rest of the state, some of these rural areas, Republican-friendly areas that have some vote in them. There is still some vote to come from Pima County. That's a strongly Democratic county. But Maricopa County is 60% of the vote in Arizona. And this was the last giant pile of votes from Maricopa County, and it leaves Katie Hobbs the lead here now of 20,000. Put this in some context. Joe Biden won this state narrowly in the 2020 presidential election. This is more than twice the margin Joe Biden had just in raw votes. Joe Biden's number ended up just under 10,000 in Arizona. Hobbs's lead is over 20,000 right now. So for Carrie Lake, she was looking for, this has been the story for the past several nights as we've been going through a very particular type of ballot in Maricopa County, mail-in ballots that voters brought in to the polls on election day in Maricopa County. There were nearly 300,000 of them. Republicans were pointing to it all week, first in the Senate race, then in the governor's race, saying this is going to be a Republican-friendly batch of votes. Once you start going through those, Republicans are going to make up ground. They're going to take the lead statewide. That's what they had said in 2020. It had been a very pro-Trump batch of votes, that type of a same-day drop-off of the mail-in ballots. Lake did do well with those votes. Again, she just got 57% with the last one we got. She got 55% last night. I think she had gotten about 52% with the first batch, or 51% earlier this week. But she needs more than that to erase the kind of deficit that she faces here against Katie Hobbs. And we can also show you Hobbs leading, you know, by nearly a point statewide, 2481. We also have been monitoring that close race for attorney general, the other outstanding race in the state. And you can see here, oh, we're still waiting on the waiting on the Maricopa update to populate in there. But you can see this is the big news here we've been waiting for all hour. Been a lot of anticipation for this all day, frankly, in both parties, because this governor's race in many ways so dependent on what those Maricopa County numbers look like. And you can see 57% is what Carrie Lake gets out of that final big batch. It pulls her a little closer, but she's still more than 20,000 votes behind Katie Hobbs in this race.
So we're still waiting for that populating in the attorney general race.
I think it's now in.
Oh, wow. So that gets, but she's still, Chris Mays is still up in that race.
Still up. And that's, now that's a range where if you're Carrie Lake, you might, if Carrie Lake were facing a 4,100 vote deficit right now, you could perhaps see from some of these rural areas, from some of these outstanding areas, that's where she was hoping to get. And I think that's where, you know, if not ahead, within striking distance. But 20,000 is a whole different ballgame than 4,400.
So this right now, we've got at this late hour, and this is the, again, this is the one of the, maybe the quintessential swing state in the U.S. right now, right? A 10,000 vote margin for Joe Biden, a popular Republican governor who won last time easily, right? Doug Ducey. This right now is a loss, a called race loss for Republicans in their Senate race, a called race loss in Secretary of State race, a gubernatorial candidate who now is down 20,000 votes and has a hard time, and an attorney general who's also down 4,000 votes, although maybe within spitting distance, depending on what vote is out there. But right now, we step back, looking at the slate fielded by the Republican Party of Arizona, it doesn't look like a particularly successful slate.
Well, I mean, certainly. I mean, there's the possibility here, if Hobbs does hang on here, that's three of the four that have lost from this Republican slate. And then, yeah, this attorney general's race, obviously, as we just showed you, is extremely tight here. So Republicans, I think, would. Now, the one thing is, when you look at the 2024 angle on this in terms of election certification in 2024 in Arizona, all four of these statewide elected officials need to sign off on a state certification. So Hamadeh is still very much in this, in the attorney general's race. If he were to vault past Mays, that's a huge if, because Mays still has some places where she could rack up more votes here. So she could certainly protect that lead she has. It's just, it's a much slimmer lead for the Democrats in the attorney general's race than the governor's race, where it's north of 20,000 votes right now. But yeah, there's the possibility here that all four of those Trump-aligned candidates could lose this race in Arizona. And yeah, just for perspective, this was 2020 presidential election. We'll show you what Arizona looked like if you need to be reminded here. But this was Joe Biden. It was just over 10,000 votes was Joe Biden's margin over Donald Trump in this state. It was 0.3 of 1 point. If you went back to 2016, Trump had carried this state by about 3.5 points. This is one of those states that Joe Biden flipped. And now in 2022, Democrats are holding out hope that they could go 4 for 4 in the statewide offices.
Wow.
And if you're a Democrat, that was an encouraging update for you just now out of Maricopa County.
All right. NBC News correspondent Von Hilliard has actually been covering the election in Arizona for months. And he's now at Mar-a-Lago, where tomorrow Donald Trump is expected to announce another run for president. Von, your reaction to this latest news?
Right. So we have not called it an NBC News here quite yet. But as Steve just did this math here, everybody was looking at as her really needing to pull in that 65% total here out of this batch. And this is, I mean, this mimics exactly what we saw in 2020 here. Really, if there was one more day, another day of batch for Donald Trump, he would have pulled off a win in Arizona in 2020. But the reality is that those ballots, they didn't exist. He came just short here. And that's what we're looking at now. And I just got to tell you, I actually took the plane here. I've been in Arizona the last 3 weeks and decided to finally take the plane and catch it here to make it to Mar-a-Lago for tomorrow night's announcement here. And really, if NBC News doesn't call us tonight, we could be on the cusp of calling it tomorrow night, just moments before Donald Trump here at Mar-a-Lago is set to announce the 2024 White House run. And I think it's important context when you look at 2018 and 2020 Trumpism, Chris, it didn't work in Arizona. And now, apparently, for the third election cycle in a row, it hasn't worked again. This is a situation here where Governor Doug Ducey is going to certify this election. Republican Attorney General Mark Brnovich, he is going to certify this election. Mark Brnovich did everything he could to find fraud in the 2020 election. He set up his own election fraud investigative unit in the AG's office
and came to the conclusion that no dead people voted. Hold on 1 second, Vaughn.
Chris, I got to throw it to you here.
Hold on 1 second. I think we're getting some word from the control room about a call here, if I'm not mistaken. We are now projecting that Democratic Secretary of State Katie Hobbs is in fact the winner in the Arizona gubernatorial race. This will make her the Democratic governor of that state. She has, according to our projections, vanquished Carrie Lake, a local TV news personality who mounted an incredibly strong campaign. Katie Hobbs was the only statewide elected Democrat. She was the Secretary of State. She ran for governor, and it looks like she will be the next governor in Arizona. Steve?
Well, that's why I was kind of stalling for time here, because I had a very strong feeling this was coming, and I was running out of ways to say it without saying it. But yes, this was an advantage of over 20,000 votes with, Maricopa now pretty much exhausted in terms of remaining ballots. Pima County may have a few, but anything to come in out of Pima is probably going to benefit Hobbs. The provisional ballots to come might benefit Hobbs as well. You just take a look around the state at the remaining areas. There are some Republican areas. Generally, they're very small in terms of population, in terms of vote share. And even in some of these Republican areas, for instance, we got an update from Yuma County, small county earlier in the evening. And it was an update of those mail ballots dropped off on election day. And Hobbs actually got more votes in the update than Lake did. So even in some of these Republican rural areas, they weren't huge batches of votes like we're talking about in Maricopa. But even there, Lake was actually losing a little bit of ground in some of the updates earlier. So looking at Maricopa, it was ball game. You knew Carrie Lake needed to get a massive number out of there. I think she needed to get this thing at least inside of 5,000, where you could plausibly make a case that maybe there are enough votes out there in just the right combination for her. But when you saw 20,000, that's a safe margin for Katie Hobbs. And again, this was, if you think back to the day or so after the election. I mean, this roller coaster, that's how the vote count always goes in Arizona. So we got initially on election night, within minutes of the polls closing, or they take an hour, but within minutes of the eligibility release votes, we got like 2/3 of the vote. And Katie Hobbs was winning big, and Mark Kelly was winning big in the Senate race because it was all of this early mail vote that they had tabulated ahead of time and they released. And then what happened was in the overnight hours on election night, they tabulated the same day vote, the vote of the folks who just went and voted at their precincts on election day. Heavily Republican. It's what brought this into single digits. And from that point forward, Carrie Lake's campaign and Republicans were all saying, just wait till you get to the same day drop off. The mail-in ballots that people dropped off at the polls on Election Day. And again, there were 300,000 of them almost out of Maricopa County. And they said that's going to be what delivers this election to Carrie Lake. That's, they said, was that was what's going to deliver the Senate race, they claimed, to Blake Masters. And we've just had 3 or 4 days now consecutively of updates that have included those ballots. And every time we've gotten them, the numbers have just not been there for Carrie Lake. So she was already in a position where she was, you know, she was throwing a Hail Mary pass here and she just did not get what she needed.
I got to say, it's almost, you know, it's a kind of model race of this election. Swing state, you had a charismatic, pro-Trump, very MAGA, very tied to 2020 was rigged Republican who ran a very strong race. She was probably one of the strongest candidates in that vein. She outperformed other candidates with her same contention about the big lie. You had a Democrat who was not an outsized personality, I think I would say about Katie Hobbs, right? Elected statewide, respected, right? Known to the people. And you have these two forces against each other in the place that's the most sort of swing state contest. And that's your result.
And I suspect that this race, because of some of those dynamics that you're describing, really did kind of hinge on Carrie Lake.
Yeah.
Whether you like her or didn't like her, and for that matter, by extension, because she had aligned herself so closely with Donald Trump, a lot of this race, I think, hinged on feelings towards Donald Trump as well, both positive and negative. But yeah, you do look, she's 0.8 of a point behind. Just compare Carrie Lake's number again to that Senate race, where Blake Masters is more than 5 points behind Mark Kelly in the Senate race. So she did outperform the Senate candidate that, all of the factors that were working in her favor got her close. But yeah, there were indications. I think a lot of Democrats were looking at Arizona before this election and saying they'd be happy if they kept the Senate seat and lost the governorship. They wouldn't be happy,
right?
But they were realistically talking about, hey, if we get a split of those two, they were saying, you know, that wouldn't be the worst outcome given the possibilities. Instead, again, they win the Senate seat fairly easily, as it turns out. Again, a 5-point margin there. They win the governorship. They win the Secretary of State's office. That's what that looks like. And again, this Attorney General's race now, I think to the extent Arizona is still a live story here, this Attorney General's race, still, obviously, 4,000 votes. Democrats can be hopeful about that, given, again, what we're talking about in terms of provisional ballots, some stuff still from Pima. There are places here, certainly, where Mays can hang on. If she does hang on, it'll be by, you know, a small amount, but that would then be a sweep. Democrats would go 4-for-4. Interestingly, you know, as all this is happening in these statewide races, we talk about all these Trump-aligned Republican candidates, potentially all four of them, going down to defeat in some of these congressional races in Arizona. It's a different story. You know, if you take a look here, that race we're talking about based in Maricopa County, look at what just happened. Dave Schweiker, the embattled Republican incumbent with that new batch of votes, his lead was fewer than 1,000 before that batch of votes. Now it has swelled to over 3,000. The Republican down here in Arizona's 6th district, his lead is over 3,500 votes. These are two House districts that Democrats really, really need if they want to have a path to 218. So just as Republicans are going down to defeat in the governor's race, have already lost the Senate race, are facing the possibility of their entire statewide slate losing, you do have these Republican House candidates potentially in position here to help deliver 218 to the Republicans in the House.
Yeah, we're going to keep our eyes on that. Well, that was exciting, Steve. Thank you for your expert and deft work there. I want to ask the control room. There was a Carrie Lake soundbite of her describing the McCain party. If you could pull that down for me. And right now we're going to go to Jen Psaki, who's an MSNBC host and former White House press secretary for President Joe Biden, and David Jolly, who's a former Republican congressman of Florida, and both join me now. And control room, just let me know when you have that bit of sound. But let me play. I want to start with this because to me, you know, anytime that I ever see anyone across the political spectrum writing a column or offering a take that says we need to stop trying to appeal to X people, I always think to myself, well, no, right. You got to appeal
to
everyone.
Make our party smaller.
Yeah. You get that, that's democracy. You want to appeal as many people as you can. And, you know, Carrie Lake,
right.
Time and time again, Jen, she was literally showing up at events down the stretch saying, we hate the McCain board. Is there any McCain Republicans? Get out of here. We put the stake in the McCain Republican Party. Take a look. Take a listen. This is how she was campaigning. Take a listen.
We may have won this battle, and I won an epic battle in Arizona. We drove a stake through the heart of the McCain machine.
I don't know, Jen Psaki. Feel like maybe you could have used a few of those votes from those people that you drove the stake through.
Right. I mean, it turns out, Chris, that Arizona, people of Arizona, still like the war hero who proudly served for decades and died heroically of cancer while saving the Affordable Care Act. People still like him. So, yes, I mean, it is clear that she misjudged that. I do think it's impossible to overstate. Carrie Lake was supposed to be either the heir apparent to Trump.
Yep.
I mean, she ran as a mini Trump, but a better communicator, as you were just talking about, Chris. I mean, I was watching her thinking, wow, she's super compelling. Oh, my God. Don't be compelled by her, right? And that is how a lot of people I talked to, Democrats, independents, non-political people, felt. Very compelling. Or even someone who was talked about as somebody who could be his running mate or take on Trump. What does that mean now? Well, it's not great to be a loser in Arizona, certainly. But it's a very different outcome than I think most people, including Democrats, expected.
There was a Republican political consultant today, David Jolly, who I thought somewhat humorously referred to the kind of batch of real hardcore MAGA candidates as, quote, freaks and geeks, as a throwback to that old show. Now, Carrie Lake, who had high name personality, high name recognition in Maricopa County, where she was a face on TV for years, and to Jen's point, was like about as sort of compelling and deft a MAGA big lie purveyor as you could find. It really strikes me as significant when you're talking about Trumpism as a dead end. In this narrow state, she couldn't pull this out.
Yeah, look, the loss of Carrie Lake is kind of the perfect coda to the last week that allows us to interpret the direction voters wanted to go, which was a rejection of the big lie, a protection of democracy, a rejection of the candidates that threatened free and fair elections. And Carrie Lake was probably second only to Doug Mastriano in terms of the most dangerous. But I do think the question, as Jen mentions, is real. What now? Because truly, if Donald Trump intends to announce tomorrow night or even keep a stranglehold on the party, it will be through this grievance conspiracy theory that somehow the election was rigged against him. And that makes Carrie Lake his perfect partner. It wouldn't surprise me at all if Carrie Lake is in Mar-a-Lago on stage tomorrow night with Donald Trump and they're either announcing a run or demanding concessions from the party should they decide not to run and let somebody else.
Well, and to that point, I mean, we will see, you know, there is reporting about her war room, Carrie Lake's, you know, Carrie Lake advising her to not contest the election or say it was rigged. But again, this is an open question, although I feel like to Ruben Gallego's point earlier this hour, it's like, so what? Knock yourself out. There's a little bit of like the air has come out of the force of that, Jen Psaki.
Well, I hope so, Chris. And certainly the last week does tell us that. All signs point to that, including her loss. But I agree with David here. It is quite possible. I mean, Trump never learns lessons. Carrie Lake is the mini Trump. Neither of them probably have learned any lessons here. So it could be that she's in Mar-a-Lago or in a couple of weeks, he decides he wants to have her on the campaign trail and they're going to double down on conspiracy theory pushing. Now, does that mean that they're going to win the Republican nomination? It doesn't look like there looks like there's cracks in the system right now, but I don't think we can rule that out as a remote possibility at this point.
Yeah. And David, I mean, a lot of people told Trump, like, please don't announce before this Georgia runoff. Looks like he's going to do it anyway. And when you're looking at these results tonight, it's like, I can't imagine that's good for the Republicans in that Georgia runoff.
Yeah, Donald Trump and Trumpism performs uniquely poorly in statewide Georgia races. Some would make the case he lost the runoff for the party, right? And they do not want him there. And so Warnock and the Dems will make it all about Trump. And I think Warnock wins in a walkaway. But I do also think there's a lesson in here. And I've stopped using the word Trumpism for this reason. It somehow suggests that if the party then drops Trump, they've now whitewashed themselves.
Right.
And I flipped the script a little bit. And the power of Donald Trump in the party is because the party embraced him and took on his identity.
They don't need him anymore.
Yeah, willingly.
Jen Psaki and David Jolly. Thank you very much. That does it for All In. You can catch us every weeknight at 8 o'clock on MSNBC. Don't forget to like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/allinwithchris.
Get the latest updates on this year's high-stakes election with MSNBC's How to Win 2024 newsletter. When you subscribe, you'll get expert analysis on key races sent straight to your inbox, including articles written by the host of the How to Win podcast, Jennifer Palmieri. Subscribe today at msnbc.com/win.